Good evening, everyone. Would you stand for the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We'll call tonight's meeting to order. Roll call. Trustee Harris.
Here.
Trustee Genrich.
Here.
Trustee Atwood.
Here.
President Rafter. Here. Trustee Dart.
Here.
Trustee Green.
Here.
Trustee Dennis.
Here.
All present and accounted for. Do I have a motion to either modify or adopt the agenda? I think we have a request to... Do we have a request to change anything? Okay. Any request to change, modify? Okay, hearing none. Do I have a motion to adopt the agenda?
So moved.
Trustee Harris, seconded by Trustee Atwood. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Agenda item number 3, presentation by Mr. Tom Sigman. Mr. Sigman.
Well, thank you once again for having me come to speak to you about what's going on, what's new at New Water. Most of this will be on our 2017 budget, but I have a couple of updates, one on adaptive management and one on our R2E2 solids project. I'll do that very quickly. So start off in the end of 2015 and 2016, beginning of 2016, New Water updated a strategic plan, and so with that strategic plan, we adopted a vision, and that vision is protecting our most valuable resource, water. Some of the elements of the strategic plan, it's available on our website, but it's the overall theme, there's some similarities to the previous version, but we updated it. It's collaborative regional leadership, sustainability, and education. And the three main areas where we're looking to make the investment in a strategic plan are engaging the community and strengthening our workforce, delivering environmental improvements, and supporting a vital economy, growing economy. So an update on the 2016 budget, so where we're at this year, and this is through August, that's the most recent information that I have. We're user fee revenue is about 102% of our budget. We're operating expenses are 91% of budget. We're expected to finish the year slightly ahead of revenue, probably in that 101-102% on revenue. And I would expect that the expense budgets are going to get closer to the 100%, but probably in the 95-96%. We do have some things that just kind of lag a little bit, but we do have some grant opportunities that are we're not going to spend quite as much of our money, your money, as we thought. So that's, in 2015, we were at 105% of user fee revenue and 97% of budget. I would expect that to be in that similar range, maybe a little lower on the revenue. Our priorities for 2017 is we're starting that budget, presented this to the commission, on time, on budget progression of the R2E2 construction. That project is a total project expense of about $169 million. So far, we are on schedule and on budget. Enhanced safety and health management system, that is something we're working for our staff and visitors to our facilities to make it safer. Develop a WPDS permit compliance strategy. Going to see that our permit will expire in end of June of 2019. We are working on a strategy because it takes that long to get to that point. Part of that strategy is working to develop the guidance for full-scale adaptive management. I'll give you a little bit more information on that. We are in the pilot program, and it's going well, but we do need to see if we can translate that to a full-scale system. Phase one of asset condition and criticality assessment at our Green Bay facility, that is a 2-year project. We'll be using a consultant to help our staff do that. it is a pretty significant effort. We've been looking at thinking about it for a couple of years. We did the DePere facility a couple of years ago, and now it's time to do the Green Bay facility. Develop and build support for our internal culture. That is an internal priority. And then investigate additional resource recovery opportunities. The R2E2 project we're going to talk about is really first foray into recovering both energy and struvite, a material that is a valuable resource that can be sold. We are in the process, and some of our staff have goals as to what's the next thing. What you give us as what you consider to be a wastewater has a lot of value left in it, and the technology and the cost of materials is allowing us to recover more and more of that. So we're continuing to look at what are those next opportunities. So I talked to you a couple of years ago, and part of the pain that we all felt over the last 4 to 5 years was to build up our rate base so we could afford to pay the debt service on the R2E2 project. One of the things to allow us to kind of build that ramp up was to collect some of your money to allow the rate to get up to where it needs to go. We're holding on to that money, and we're going to use it to pay cash for part of the R2E2 project and not take out that debt. So we've got about $5.5 million in the reserve. We expect, assuming that we can collect the money that we have, the net income is we'll have about $11 million in that reserve that we will begin to use in 2017-2018 and finish it up by 2019. We have no further intention to collect any more from that reserve, and we will start to spend that down. It'll be used on some of the projects that are yet to finish up the R2E2 project. Looking at flows and loads, and we do this every year, 2013, 14, and 15 are actuals. 16 and 17 are budgeted. What we've seen over a few years was a drop in the biochemical oxygen demand coming into the facility. We've stabilized on that, and so we're essentially fairly stable with both flows and suspended solids and BOD loads, which is a good thing. Our proposed expenses for 2017, what we're showing is really three categories, O&M, operation and maintenance, debt service, and annual capital, our total capital expenditures, and then added up for total expenses. We've got our 2016 budget. We've got our 2016 projected to finish up at the end of the year. And then our 2017 budget is on the far right. It is the budget for total expenses for 2017 is up about $1 million. The capital, debt service, and annual capital is as identical to what it was budgeted for 2016. So you can see that there's about a 53% O&M, 47% debt service and capital, and that's been relatively consistent of percent. We've been shifting a little more towards the capital and debt service over the last several years, but about 50-50. So when you look at where's the O&M, the operation and maintenance money being spent, about 50% of it is salaries and benefits. And then we've got power, natural gas fuel, so total energy. Maintenance and contracted services are other large ones. And then it falls into other categories to make up the rest. So I talked a little bit about the beginning about a WPDS permit compliance strategy. That existing permit expires in June of 2019. Feels like it's a long ways off, but it isn't.
What is a WPDS permit?
The Wisconsin Pollution Discharge Elimination System. It is the state of Wisconsin permit system that controls all of our discharges to the waterways. So we have where it's a 5-year permit that we reapply for every 5 years. The Department of Natural Resources gives us different terms and conditions, and then they reissue it every 5 years.
Thank you.
So we have been working on agreement with the Department of Natural Resources to allow for adaptive management. So the DNR has said it's okay with that, but we're still working out. There's a lot of details yet to determine whether we're going to be able to work in certain areas of the watershed. We're working through that. Adaptive management could defer major capital improvements for phosphorus and suspended solids potentially until 2039. So you're going to see a slide that shows a large capital project kind of working through the system, and we're hoping to defer that to 2039 when we need to for other reasons. And then just a sidelight note is that we're envisioning that adaptive management, which will be kind of a pay-as-you-go annual expense, would be O&M expense rather than capital, because most of that cost would be paid to out in the agriculture watershed where we don't really own the assets. So major capital projects, some of these are either in process or will get started. Some will get finished this year and others are going to continue, but we've got the R2E2 project in continued construction. We are doing design right now on two interceptor projects, one on Dutchman Creek down Neshwabanon, and then Scott Bayshore along the east side in Green Bay. Our DePere facility, we are going to start design of a backup, a standby generator system, and the entire electrical switching, power switching is 40 years old, so it needs to be replaced, and we're going to start the design this year, and that will likely get replaced in 2018 and 2019, but the project will get started in 2017. Bayview Interceptor, that's the project that we have on Highway 41 up by the Harley-Davidson. It is a pipeline that we put in about 3 years ago. There was a design problem. We had a partial failure on it. We stabilized that pipe, but we needed to wait for the DOT to be able to finish their work on Highway 41, and beginning in the spring of 2017, we're going to go back in and replace that pipe. That project will be the subject of some legal action with the designers on that. So we're hoping to recover the cost of that through legal action. And then Charles Street Interceptor design in down in DePere area, it is one that needs to be replaced. It just does not have the capacity. So those are the projects that we've got going on, either starting, completing, or continuing in 2017. Showing our long-term capital projects out through 2026, you can see the yellow is the finishing up the R2E2 project. The one that likely will capture your attention is the light blue, which is that a phosphorus project. So we're required, we either construct facilities to remove phosphorus from our Green Bay and DePere facilities. We are able to do adaptive management to work into the watershed, which is a compliance process, which would give us up to 20 years to defer some of that major capital, trade for it. So what we're showing here is the construction. And if we don't do anything else, this is what that's going to look like. It is almost too horrible to imagine the cost of following on the R2E2 project. So we are spending a significant amount of our effort to make adaptive management successful, and then to move that blue out 5 years at a time up to 20 years. But that's the size of what that project, that's about a, depending upon inflation, anywhere from about a $220 to a $300 million project. It's a very large project.
And Tom, those are projects required by the DNR?
The blue would be. Yes, that's a permit. That's a change in our permit. Some of the other ones are compliant. Some are just replacing aging assets that need to be put in service, that need to be upgraded or replaced. But the blue is definitely permit compliance. So one of the things that we did in early this year, and we do it about every 4 or 5 years, depending upon what the impact or size of our capital improvements is, we have essentially our user charge system. It's governed by a tripartite agreement we have with now Procter & Gamble and City of Green Bay, but it requires that to be upgraded and periodically. And what it does is it allocates the cost of the projects, the cost of O&M to unit processes, and then eventually to the 5 billing parameters and now fixed charge billing parameters. So that In the interim, so we start a project, it takes a number of years to get completed, we do the accounting, and then we bring in a firm to actually make sure that those projects get allocated correctly, and we really can't do that allocation until the project is complete. So in 2016, we've had a significant, last time it was done in 2011, we've had a significant amount of construction, and it's putting it in the right bucket. So there's pluses and minuses in here, and so what we had done was redid the allocation and then reran the 2016 budget just to isolate and see what that allocation by itself did. So what it did was the volume charge went down about 8%. You can see biochemical oxygen demand went up about 5%. Suspended solids, really no change. Phosphorus down. The total kelvil nitrogen went up about 16%. That's just basically where those costs belong. We do that about every 4 or 5 years. But I wanted just to show you so that you don't we don't confuse the changes that are going on in 2016 or 2017 with what actually has happened, just to get us into compliance. So our municipal rate, and this shows what it was in 16, 17. We bill you as a contractor or a customer of ours. We're a wholesale provider, and so we meter volume or the flow that comes from you as a village. And then we know how much the volume, and then we check the concentration of the parameters and charge you based on the pounds, total pounds that you've discharged of the BOD, suspended solids, phosphorus, and the nitrogen, and then the volume. And that is then, you distribute that back to all of your retail and commercial customers. One of the things that we are doing different in 2017. So beginning in 2014, we implemented a fixed charge. So fixed charge is not new money. It's reallocating some of the money from these parameters to what is a fixed charge to basically provide a little bit more stability for the debt load that we are taking on. And so it doesn't matter how much it rains or what the flows and loads are. That fixed charge is to pay help pay some of the debt. But it's not new money. It's just a reallocation. And so beginning in 2014, a consultant did a study for us. We involved a number of customers, and at that time our commission agreed to have a 15% of our total budget was going to be the fixed charge, and we hold that constant for 3 years. The comments were made, and they were very good comments, that really the fixed charge should be related to capital, not for O&M. And so when you calculated it back to capital, it was about 35% of the capital in 2014. And as the capital has increased and the O&M has not as much, it got down to about 32% in 2016. So what we proposed to our commissioners was for the fixed charge to go from that 31% of capital to 45% of capital. Again, no new money. It's just a reallocation from some of the strength and volume parameters. But it's about 45% of our total capital expenditure for 2017. As we look at the where the money's coming from, Green Bay and De Pere are our largest customers, followed by Ashwaubenon, Howard, and Alloway, Bellevue, Procter & Gamble, and then the remainder of our 18 customers make up the rest of that total revenue. In summary, for the 2017 budget, we are recommending a 2.9% increase in budgeted total expenses. O&M expenses are increasing by 5.2% over the 2016 budget. Their Wisconsin Public Service has not asked for a rate increase, so we have budgeted 0% increase in our electricity and natural gas costs. It's working out that we are not asking for any increase in our capital That is staying the same as it was for 2016. So the budget increase is all coming from O&M. We're going to begin the asset condition and criticality assessment, continue advanced adaptive management that we envision that to be a significant cost savings for compared to the alternative for our customers. And then we do offset what turns out to be most of our interceptor debt through the interceptor cost recovery reserve, which Commission is going to talk about likely in early 2017, that we just have been waiting for our interceptor master plan to get completed, identify what those projects are, to decide what to do with the interceptor cost recovery reserve. The communication that's going to follow is having meetings like this. The budget, there's a hearing and an adoption on December 7th. We do have one more commission meeting before December 7th. It is October 20th. We will bring forward any new information we have on the budget. Right now, I think we are in that 99%+ complete for the budget, so there's not a lot of things in play at this point for the budget, but if we get new information, we will bring that to the commission in October, and then right on the December 7th, we will send notification out to all of our customers with the final budget. Most of our customers are adopting or including information in their budgets, but I know that one or two wait until our budget is adopted before they move forward. So with that, I'm going to move away from budget. I'll come back to it.
Just one question. How much does the 5% in increase in O&M spending equate to in dollars?
I will look that up for you. It is right about $1.1 million. So it's taking it from our budget in 2016 was $19.6 million, and it will take it to $20.7 million.
And so if Alloway makes up 5% of your world, our cost is 5% of that? Is that directly?
Yeah, kind of. It really depends on your flows and loads, how you get charged back. Some customers would pay, that's probably fair. Probably fair, 5%.
Okay, thanks.
So I'm going to give you just a short update on a couple of the activities that we're doing. I know I've talked with you about this before. R2E2, our solids project resource recovery electrical energy generation. Construction is going well. They've had a good winter, good summer. This building, this was probably taken 3 weeks ago. You would almost see that building, for the most part, covered in precast panels right now. We are there starting to enclose the building. It's a pretty generous three-story building with a lot of equipment, a lot of things going on in the building. So that's the facility. We placed, I think also about 3 weeks ago, we have two megawatt gas internal combustion engine and generator sets. So we have the ability to produce 4 megawatts of energy, and those arrived and were put in before they started putting the panels on. One of the pieces of equipment that probably has fascinated most of us is there's a disc dryer. It is a very large piece of equipment. You can see the size. When you talk to the people from Parsled that make it, they consider that to be a small dryer. This dryer weighs 86 tons, came across the Atlantic and St. Lawrence Seaway, and then was driven up from Milwaukee. It was a pretty monumental event to get it off the trailer and then eventually get it into the building. So it is set. I sleep a little better with that because that is a big, big piece of equipment. We have also within that solids building, a significant component of it is a fluid bed incinerator and all of the pollution control equipment. So what you're seeing, so we have existing in our solids two large multiple hearth furnaces. They're going to be replaced by this single fluid bed incinerator on the left. It was fabricated on site. They are in the process of putting in the refractory brick on it. And then what you, just to the right of that, is the economizer, which is going to do heat recovery. And then it'll flow through a number of pollution control devices, a wet scrubber, an electrostatic precipitator, and then the vessel on the right will be an activated carbon. So there's a lot of pollution control equipment on this this train. So that's some of the pictures on the solids management. We are going to build two digesters. They are going to be very similar in height and diameter, I think, to the water utilities tanks that were put south of us, and we are in the process of forming up the cones, a very deep cone for the digester. I think they're going to start the pouring on that tomorrow. It will take, for each cone, 31 hours. It'll be a continuous pour. It'll be going around the clock, so they cannot have a joint in that. So a lot of exciting stuff happening. The site changes day to day, and as I've said to all of the public works directors, you are welcome anytime you wish to come out and see where your money's getting spent. We'll get you geared up and get out onto the site. It is very interesting. So adaptive management, the other thing that we're working on, and we're doing, as I mentioned, the pilot project. So Silver Creek is part of Duck Creek, and we've been working on this for about 3 years. 2016 was a big milestone for us because we're actually getting some practices put in the fields. We've been doing planning, working on agreements, so we're now putting practices in the fields. A lot of parallel things going to try to evaluate all of the various options that we could have for adaptive management, try to measure some of the efficiency so that when we go to a full-scale system, we have a pretty good idea of what would work and how much it might cost. So these best management practices are being installed. Filter strips, I'll give you, show you some pictures. Critical area plantings are similar to a filter strip, but it's in where there might have been a gully in a field that would wash out every year, and we're looking to try to minimize that washout. Grass waterways, cover crops. The cover crops are going in now to provide some cover on the field, and I'm going to show you a photograph that is part of a video that I think is a really good video. You see it on our website through a YouTube video. But I don't know if you can see this, but the video shows the water, and this was back in, I think, March or possibly April, still ice on the field. And once you start from the top and the right, and you see a field with the grass, so it's got a cover crop on it. The water looks really quite clear. So as you start to come down that video, you see coming from the left just this plume of solids in the water. And what it is coming off of a field that is on the left just out that does not have a cover crop on it in the winter. And so it's a very dramatic, and these two flows come together, go into a culvert, and this is actually part of Silver Creek. So it's been a really dramatic way to show to people what is possible, kind of in the upper part and the right, and some of the things that we're working on to try to get cleaned up. So that video is available. I don't bring it here because it usually lock up on me in a presentation. So I'm going to show you just a couple of the projects that we're putting in. Now, this was a soybean field. It is a soybean field. And we put in this grass waterway. They ended up kind of mowing out the soybeans in this area, doing some shaping. And then what you see on the right is they've shaped it. They put down seed and kind of a grass mat. And if I took the picture now, you would see a grass stand that it has formed that will it'll direct the water through that field, which went there anyway, but it'll direct it through and keep the sediment on the field. Another example, this is on another field. You can see there were an awful lot of gullies. These are the natural water channels in that field. We went and did the same thing. The farmer who participates in this What they're going to end up doing is taking out the trees and changing their planting pattern so that it just fits their equipment. But these are permanent practices. We're doing most of this through Great Lakes Restoration Initiative grant that we received for the project, and it's paying for these things to happen. The farmers also went out, and we worked with them in Brown County Land and Water Conservation to get EQIP, I can never remember the name of the program, but it's a funding process through National Resource Conservation Service. They were able to get additional funding to put in these practices. Actually, in that small watershed in Silver Creek in 2016, about somewhere between $400,000 and $500,000 of federal money came into that watershed and was used to help people, you know, run bulldozers and pay for seed and pay for planting. So we're expecting to see beginning in 2017. We've had 3 years of baseline, 14, 15, and 16, so we kind of know what the stream looks like. 17 and 18, we should start to see how well some of these things can do. I'm finishing up, but I bring people back. This is what we do. We clean water. We take what you consider to be a waste product. We clean it up and we put it back into the river, cleaner than the river is. That is our core function. All these other things we're doing just kind of fit around that. So, and I close with just reminding people of our vision. So I received, so that's it for my presentation. I received the letter that you had sent to me, and I didn't get my response out until this afternoon. I believe, Craig, the trustees have a copy of it. It's not a long response. I try to address your comments. I want to express on behalf of myself and my commission, they greatly appreciate the interest that you take, and you are unique in that, and our commission appreciates the involvement of our customers in what is a very important part of the business. So with that, I'll answer any questions you might have.
No one have questions?
I have a couple questions. Just my clarification and understanding. Just a curiosity, if you have a number on the cost of production ratio of payback on the R2E2.
On the what, I'm sorry?
A cost to production ratio payback on the R2E2.
That is not a calculation that we've done. R2E2, I know that there are some components, such as the nutrient recovery. We look at, it's probably got about an 11 or 12 year envisioning of payback. But that is on one component for the struvite recovery. Some elements of it are just mandated, and there really is no recovery in terms of payback. That's our business. This is a regulatory. We do things because the state and federal government tell us we have to. So
understood. They usually have payback on any biodigester system that I've ever seen has always had, even those that run at minimal efficiency. Usually they're running, these generators are running 24/7 as more common within the industry. I think there would be some form of payback over a period of given time, along with the amortization of the cost of the actual generators themselves.
You're correct on that, and I do not have that number for you. I can get it.
The other thing is that I know you said you're putting grasses and soybeans into for preservation of the land. Is there anything in relation to concern about the maintenance of the soil quality after the use of the soybeans, with all the kind of crop rotation that was going to be put in there to keep the nutrients balanced in that soil?
In general, and I'm not a farmer, I'm going to tell you what a wastewater engineer knows about farming, but the crops that are grown, it's on a rotation, typically soybeans, corn, maybe some alfalfa, and
that's all I need to know.
Yes.
Because one takes out the other, puts in soybeans and corn.
One of the things that is being done with some of these cover crops, so it's put in the fall. Some of them are put in earlier in the season and then left to be throughout the winter, and then they're plowed in. And the benefits that have been seen on some of the farm demonstration network projects have been increase in soil organic matter. And we don't really know where that's going to go for us, but the farm demonstration is a project which Brown County has been doing for a couple of years, are seeing pretty substantial increase in organic matter, which is going to benefit both the ability to hold, take up and hold water, and should be for production.
They're doing the chemical analysis, I'm sure, along with that, to maintain consistency of the quality of the soil.
Farmers in through their normal agronomic agents, they're doing chemical analysis.
It's going to be the farmers.
What we're looking at mostly is phosphorus in the soil and then in the water. That's what we're mostly looking at.
Which brings me to my next question. You were talking about moving the funds. The actual phrase was not new money, but relocation. This isn't going to be some of the accounting that was similar to what happened a couple of years ago where that $1 million got moved. Is this, I'm more curious about where you're taking from and where it's going to.
So if you're, let me just, I'm going to look and see what we envision Village's bill. So the Village of Allen,
the Village's bill, I'm just curious about the actual accounting process of taking from one, putting into the other.
Your bill envisioned for 2017 will be about $1.8 million. $460,000 of that is a fixed charge. If we didn't have a fixed charge, your bill would still be $1.8 million. So it's an allocation of money that was previously charged to volume, to BOD, suspended solids, phosphorus, and nitrogen, and put into a fixed charge. We've been doing it for 3 years. I think we keep track of it pretty well.
And then in regards to salaries, I have a question. Based on the results of the survey data, staff recommended acceptance of the consultant's recommendation to hold 2016 ranges of pay for grades 5 through 8 to approximately end, adjust grade 9 by 1%, while pay grades 10 through 17 are increased by 1.9%. I would think that those in pay grades 10 through 17 are making a fair amount of money, more than those who are at pay levels 5 through 8. So the percentages would seem to be larger dollar amounts. It just seems like the guy on the lower end of the deal isn't quite getting as much money as maybe he should be.
Pay grades, the higher the pay grade, the more the hourly rate is, that is correct. When it's as high as it should be, that's kind of get over to interpretation. So what we have done in 2015, we did a detailed survey. Our consultant did, I think there were about 17 utilities throughout Wisconsin and throughout the Midwest, and looked at each of these positions and pay grades and determined what the market, kind of this what we call our control point, what the market was for each of the positions. And what we found in 2015 was that at the lower end of the market, below pay grade 10, going in 2016, those pay grades were ahead of the market. So the control point was below where their control point actually was. What we found in the upper end was to a degree where they were behind the market. So the consultant doesn't do that detailed survey, do it about every 3 years. And so this year they did a survey, contacted a lot of the firms, said, what are you planning to do? Are you planning to do changes, they're going to be uniform across the board, so we've asked all these same utilities a question, and it was determined that a 1.9% adjustment across all pay grades of what was recommended. And so, for example, a pay grade 9 in 2016 was 0.9%, their control point was 0.9% ahead of the market. So if you apply the 1.9%, they would see a 1% market adjustment. So what we're seeing on the low end, and the consultant is seeing this in other communities as well, is that the lower end of the market, they're ahead of the market, and we're going to have to wait for the market to catch up before they do a market adjustment. and on the higher end of the market, it is not the case that they are ahead of the market.
And then one other question is kind of back tracking on this, and that is that at last year at this time when you came to see us, we were talking about the possibility of looking at funds for a phosphorus production plant. Is that something that you're still considering or even thinking about, or is that now financially out of the future?
Well, we, until we know and DNR will accept that we're going to be able to do adaptive management, we have to keep an eye on that, those improvements to our treatment facilities. Are we saving for that? No. We're trying to catch up with the R2E2 right now. And that is why we're going to work as hard as we can to push that off, because we are not building up the rate to deal with that project.
And what is the approximate end time for the R2E2 project?
The project is to be substantially complete, which means we take ownership of it at the end of April of 2018. Final completion later that year. And then we have one more project. It's about a $3.5 million project to finish up all of the site work and then also tear down the existing facility. That'll be 19 and 20 once the R2E2 project's up and running.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Just about the phosphorus abatement or whatever. I think you used the term scary number, that's for sure. Is there anything that could change that dramatically up or down, be it political, be it new technology, or are we looking at that no matter what?
I don't exactly know where the politics are going to go, but it hasn't mattered who was controlling our legislature. The EPA, these rules are in place for us as a point source. So in my vision, there's no change politically. Could EPA and DNR change their mind and make it more stringent? Anything's possible. The thing that we have looked at, and that is a big reason for us to want to put it off, is the technology will get less expensive. That's just, you know, the more time you put into it, technology will become more economical. The other thing is, if we put this these facilities in today, it would be specifically to deal with phosphorus. 15 years from now, our facilities will be, you know, in the vicinity of 55 years old. There's going to be a major need to rehabilitate and replace them. And also there will be other things that are going to come in that will be regulated on. So that is our hope, is to be working in the watershed to still get that same water quality improvement at a much lower cost and defer this to when it makes sense.
Thank you. Mr. Harris? I was going through some of the paperwork. It's trying to figure out, is there a 3-4 sentence summary you could give someone on describing what the R2E2 project is? Just give them the quick overview without going into a ton of detail. How would you describe it?
Well, it is first a project to replace aging solids handling infrastructure. The stuff is worn out. Second, it is a forward-looking approach to recover, to treat what we receive as a resource to be recovered, not as a waste to be disposed of. And so that is a major focus that we have of trying to just squeeze as much as we can out of the, in terms of energy, we're looking at phosphorus. So it's needed to be done because of aging infrastructure, but it's also an opportunity to get on the front edge of where we need to go.
I like one of the last slides that you put up where the gentleman was just holding up the picture of water. That helps get the point across to someone who's asking about some of these expenses. So that helps. Thank you. I did have a couple other questions. Last year you talked about the implementation of a high deductible health plan for the workers, but it was too late to implement for 2016. Will it be implemented for 2017?
We evaluated that at our commission meeting last week, and the commission decided to stay with the traditional health plan, and there were a couple of reasons for it. Last year, there was a difference between the cost, the premium cost of the high deductible and the traditional plan, but it was not... It was 15%. It was important, but by the time you factored in the transference of the risk, transference of the cost, and possibly the use of a district contribution to a health savings account, it was deemed to be just not a good use of money. What we were expecting. So in 2015, there was about 6%. A high deductible plan was about 6% less expensive premium. 2015, it was 15% less expensive. So we were envisioning that trend continue, and that's we worked to get our employees provided and did a lot of information sessions for our employees, expecting that trend would continue. For 2017, it was 14.9%. And the way that and we're within the local government pool in the state of Wisconsin health plan, and there's less than for 16 there's less than 1% of the participants in the local government pool that are taking the high deductible plan, so they're seeing some of the same things that we are. It has just not created enough of an incentive to cover the additional risk. What the state is doing for 2018, they are going to be looking at a self-insurance and changing. They're going to hire a consultant, I think, in October to completely review their health insurance, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Okay. The information I remember from last year was that it was about $160,000 worth of savings for the organization, only it was just too late to implement. So if you're at 15 and you go to 14.9, you're still going to have at least $150,000 worth of savings, won't you?
Well, that was total premium if the district did not contribute to a health savings account, which we've seen is pretty traditional in the business, at least initially. And so when you factored in bringing, I think it was... I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it was about a $15,000 savings by the time you factored in district contribution to a health savings account for the employees, and it just wasn't enough.
Okay. And then I was looking at some of the old numbers. I'm looking at the revenue that was brought in. If I look at 2012 actual compared to what we're projecting for 2017 budget, revenue is going up 42.5%.
Over that period of time.
Mm-hmm. So over that period of time. And then as I look at the debt service, and you said it's remained relatively stable, but I disagree, because in 2013 end of year, I have it from the old presentations, we were under 40%. 2016 projected is 49.1%. So it's jumping from under 40 to almost 50. Without a couple questions about the phosphorus project, but at what point do you see it dropping back under 40, or depending on the delay of the phosphorus project, even down to 33% of the of operations would be debt service?
So I probably needed to be a little more clear. I was saying it's about the same. It's from 2016 budget to 2017 budget.
Okay.
And that included the additional amount of money we were collecting for the R2E2 reserve. So the R2E2 project, we're going to have that debt for the next 20 years. The bulk of the money, all but $20 million of it, is going to be in Clean Water Fund, which will have a constant payment for the next 20 years. So we are... With the 2016 budget, we, including the rate stabilization reserve, we got to the point where we needed to get to keep that project constant. for the next 20 years, it will never get back down to 33% because that debt's going to be with us, and I don't envision O&M costs increasing. You know, there's two ways to do it. You can either reduce your debt or you increase your O&M cost, and I don't see the O&M cost going up to that. So debt is going to be in the 40-plus percent with us for a while.
Okay. And how many other organizations throughout the state are going to have to do a similar phosphorus project? Is it limited to just our area or just your organization? Our organization?
There's a statewide standard for a river, the Milwaukee River, the Fox River, of 0.1 milligrams per liter. That is our discharge level. If it's a stream, which there are a lot of utilities that discharge the stream, it's 0.075. So 0.1, 0.075. If you were Oshkosh or Fond du Lac discharging to Lake Winnebago, it would be 0.04. Just exponential order of magnitude to so these are statewide standards. There is a difference if you are a Lake Michigan discharger, and it's fairly complicated, but they may get some relief. I'm not quite, they're just still working through that issues, but every discharger to a river, a stream, or an impoundment is going to have what we have or worse.
And then where was that with 42.5% of the revenue going up? I understand that a lot of that has to go to debt reduction or just general payment of that, but I also have concerns about the O&M budget because that's more under our control than the debt service. And while salaries are at the 1.9%, when I looked at office and admin over the last 5 years, that's up 91%. Contracted services is up just under 80%. Both of those, in my mind, are salaries and benefits. I know office and admin can be staplers and other things like that, but even contracted services, more often than not, those are things that are done by an employee. You're just farming out the work. I look at the salary survey. You said it was about, I think this, from what I remember, it was about $12,000 to do that work. That falls into that area. We did our own here. On the scale, it may be slightly different, but I think we were able to get it done for $3,000. And then on an annual basis, isn't yours about $3,000? So I want to make sure that all of the money that we're spending is just getting spent as well as it could.
And we certainly do look at that, try to make sure that we're good stewards of your money. You'll hear me, if you heard me talk internally, that would be something I say, good steward of our customers' money. Couple of things, the office and administration is not just staplers. It does include that. But for our facility and the way we have grouped things, it includes a lot of our supervisory control and data acquisition. The automation that runs our facilities comes through that. When you buy a new piece of software, software is expensive, but the maintenance fees, the annual fees. So that's been the biggest part of that increase is really more in the information solutions and the SCADA, the field side of that. Yeah, that the contracted services has gone up quite a bit. One of the things that it does show up in the expenses, and it started in, not sure if it started in 15, it could have started in 14, is about $500,000 a year that is spent on the R2 or the Silver Creek pilot. We've received a grant for a Great Lakes restoration, so that is offset in revenue.
I remember seeing that last year.
Yeah, so it's about the same, almost the same, $440,000 or $470,000, similar. Yeah, there's a lot going on.
When I put all those together, then over the 5 years, we're at almost 24%.
Yeah.
So it caught my attention.
One of the things that just want to let you know as we're getting closer to it is, so in our 2016 budget, we hired 4 limited-term employees as treatment operators. We had about half of a year, so we had 2 full-time equivalents in the budget. That group started in July 1 of this year. They will be with us until the end of 2018 to basically help our staff run the facility and allow our staff to then be able to do the training and the startup. So at the end of 2018, those 4 positions will go away. At some point in 2018, may not be fully realized, probably won't be fully realized until 2019, we're envisioning that the ability for us to generate electricity and recover heat and not pay for natural gas will offset our purchase of electricity. Currently, we purchase somewhere in the vicinity of $3.6, $3.7 million a year of energy. It's our projection, but we envision about half of that, probably at least half of that, we will not have to buy anymore. So that's going to show as a reduction in our O&M budget. So we've got some things that the R2E2 is going to allow us to do and not going to fully show up until 2019.
Thank you.
You had said that all but $20 million. How much was the total? I mean, I'm curious about what the all but part was.
$169 million is the total. We did a $20 million general obligation bond early in the project. That is a 35-year term. Interest only for the first 20 years, and the last 15 years is going to be principal. So that was because we just weren't going to be able to... The design of the facility, you can't really get your money to the Clean Water Fund until you do start construction.
And then there were some concerns and some thoughts that last year, for a little closer listenership, part of the GNSD to the public service directors, and they're including cost oversight for continuing operations. And I'm curious, Craig, are they listening to the public service directors and giving them good hearing as to what input you have in regards to efficient operations? We were talking about the building last year and the construction and the ability to be able to do things on a wiser basis. Are they continuing to work with the public service directors?
I'm hoping he's nodding his head yes.
Dealing with the technical stuff here. Specifically to your question about working with the Birch directors over the last 2.5-3 years, on 3 different projects, including the development of R2E2, there's been a lot of involvement. There really has been. In fact, they kicked off the Interceptor project a week ago, and almost all of the customers were present for that kickoff meeting in the inception of the finalizing the approach to interceptor improvements and rehab over the next 20 years. So that's worked quite well. Yes, it definitely has. I've said this to the commission that we have to compliment Tom and the commission that they've been willing to work with the public works directors and give us a lot of input. And some of the things we've suggested have been adopted in the projects.
It hasn't always been that way.
No, absolutely not.
That's good to hear. I do have another question, and that is in regards to, separately, the makeup of the board itself. There's been questions over the years. At one point in time, a few years back, there was actually an elected official who was sat on the board. Now, this is many years ago, Clarence Matusik, part of our last meeting. And I don't believe that there are any elected officials that currently sit on the board. And I am curious as to, and I understand it's the county executive that does most of the appointments, if there is a possibility of having a little better input, insight, and an eye on behalf of the citizens in regards to the board itself.
The makeup of our board is 5 members that are appointed by the county executive, approved by the county board on rotating 5-year terms. It had been a practice for a period of time, not a policy, not a requirement. that there was an elected official. Oftentimes it was a county board supervisor that was, and so the last acting or standing county board supervisor that was appointed to our commission was Mark Tumpak. And shortly after he was appointed, he did not, was not reelected. So Mark has continued to serve, but is not a county. And that's oftentimes, in the 9 years that I've been there, it is a challenge because our terms tend to be longer than some of the county board supervisors stay on the county board, and we don't always get someone. But that is at the county, at the county supervisor's discretion, and he makes the decision.
Well, it has been something that we've talked about in question in the past, and it's just when you're dealing with any amount of money that has to do with the citizens' pocketbooks, it's one of the things we'd like to keep an eye on. I mean, to paraphrase Herbert Gerson, a million here and a million there, sooner or later you're talking real money.
Mark has, Commissioner Tupac has continued. He came to us as someone who had a very strong fiscal conservative bent and has continued that. So I will tell you that Commissioner Tupac continues, and while he doesn't serve on the board, county board, continues to ask us the same questions he did when he served on the county board.
Thank you. Tom, I just have two questions. Regarding the salaries, you had mentioned that from grade 0 through 10, I think?
Five through, I'm sorry, the last guy.
You were leading the curve.
Five, four. Going from 15 into 16, it was pay grades 5 through 9.
Okay.
9 has caught up. 8 is right at the market. So it's 5 through 7 that are leading the market at this point.
And are those folks getting raises this year?
They will not get a market adjustment. If they, throughout in their performance, they may get, they may have a step increase within their pay grade, but it would be, there's no market adjustment for that group of employees.
Okay. Is there a reason that your employees have to be leading the salary scale as opposed to, we went through the same exercise last year as a village, and our goal was to be right in the middle of everyone else so that we were fair to both parties. Am I wrong in assuming that most of your people are leading the pack in the industry, or are you right in the middle?
It would be not correct. So what we consider to be the control point or the, it used to be called midpoint of the pay grade. Our goal, and I would say we are, for anyone that is pay grade 8 and above, we are at market. Pay grades 5 through 7 are below, or I'm sorry, are ahead of market.
Okay. And so the overall increase really isn't an average of 1.9%. That's for the market adjustments, or is that
it's
for
the market? It's the market adjustment. Okay. Some employees, a new employee that might be moving up through their experience, would have the ability to get the salary increase as well.
Okay. And from performance as well?
Only from performance.
And do you know how much of an increase that bucket of money was?
I don't offhand. I can get that information for you. We do have the information. I just don't have it right here.
Okay. And the last thing I want to ask is, I know for a long time this board has asked that the commission meetings be held in the evening so that people can attend, and we included that in Craig's email to you on the 21st. I haven't read your response in total, but did you respond to that?
You know, I didn't respond in the evening, and I apologize for that. We have... the commission has been made informed of that and has not requested to do an evening meeting. Our commission.
If the commission is thankful for our support and our input, as you put it, I would suggest they look at that and let us know what they think.
I will. Your letter was shared with the commission. I will shared with them again.
Thank you. Any other questions? Yes, Trustee Green.
Just an observation and then a question. With your health insurance, as you're looking at high deductible savings plans, take a longer view than 1 year payback. Because the 1 year is where normally companies will fund the health savings accounts, but then it goes down from there as employees have time to ramp up to the changes in the plans. So it's not just a one-year viewpoint. I would take a longer 5 and 10 year view of that as you're changing.
I mean, my recommendation would not be to fund it for 1 year to stop.
Well, it gradually typically goes down to a level that's acceptable. But yeah, it doesn't stay that way forever. I've never seen that in any of the companies I've worked with. And then the second is, are you going to have an open house and educational session for all of the community? Once RTV2 is done?
Almost definitely. Okay. Most definitely. We've tried to have some type of an open house event every year. I'm not sure if the one we did was last year or this year, but we will do it again. I will talk to remind Tricia Brown or Tricia Garrison, because we've hosted it here, we've hosted it at the Village of Ashwaubenon, and we always have one at our facility. We will look to do it again. They're not well attended, but those that do come have good questions.
Good. Well, hopefully we'll get more attendance. Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Singer? I will commend you on your grasp of the details.
Well, yes, thank
nicely
you.
Done.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks, Tom. Okay, moving on. Announcements. Trevor, do you want to do A?
Sure. John Schuster has been a member of our bicycle and pedestrian committee since the inception July of last year. Just due to scheduling conflicts, he has had to resign.
Okay. Well, thank you. Mr. Chester has been quite involved, I know, in the bike and ped and the bike committee before, and we thank him for his service. Announcement B, Father Claude Alloway Catholic School auction at 333 Hilltop Drive from noon to midnight on November 5th. It's a recurring event, and it's a fun event, so if you're looking for something fun to do on November 5th, head over to 333 Hilltop.
Had this been there, according to the note, that they historically have held this in the spring or late winter, and now they're switching?
Okay. The schools combined.
Yeah, this is the combination of what was St. Matthew's School and Resurrection Catholic School and into Father Alloway Catholic School. I thought it was Father Claude Alloway.
No, Claude Alloway.
And then budget schedule, Debbie?
Brad?
Brad, Debbie Brad?
Yeah, this is just a reminder that on October 24th and October 26th we'll be at 5 p.m. we'll start our budget process with the board. It is open to the public and it's held here at the Village Hall.
Thank you, sir.
Both of those at 5?
Fire Prevention Week, October 9th through 15th. I'm guessing that's what Don't Wait, Check the Date stands
is about.
So don't forget to check and replace your smoke alarms and CO2 machines. Return of additional stadium tax funds. Brad, do you want to talk about that?
Yes, we did receive a press release from Representative David Steppen's office indicating that the village will be receiving an additional $21,000 and some change as part of the stadium tax refund. So it puts us up to $726,000.
That's great. When are we supposed to receive those funds?
The check has been sent already.
Check's in the mail.
Checks in the bank.
Checks in the bank. Well, thank you. That's nice. Regarding also attention LOA residents, from October 10th through October 14th, we are flushing water mains around the village. Please check your tap water for discoloration before using. And Craig, some of the properties that are down by the East River, is that when they have trouble with some of the water backing up because of the pressure?
Up in the northwest corner?
Yeah.
In the northern end. Okay. And in the central area down here.
And so we let them know that we're going to be doing it so they can take corrective action? Thank you. I would like to make an announcement. I'll come back. One more announcement. I received a request from the CP Center for consideration for us to give them a contribution out of our stadium tax money. They serve our community, and they're in the middle or getting ready to go into a large capital campaign. And they read that Suamico gave some money to one of the nonprofits up in their way, and so they asked us to consider them. So I'd like to add to the list for discussion.
Okay. Can we ask Suamico for some money?
Brad?
Yes, I have just two more quick announcements. We are looking for photos for the Help Out Elway booklet for 2017. The deadline is coming up October 20th or something around that time period. And then today we had our first meeting of the planning session of celebrating the opening, reopening of the Webster Avenue Bridge. It was today at 1:30 at Schrader's Flowers. There's about 8 individuals that are helping put this together at this point. We'll be meeting again next Tuesday at 1:30 again at Schrader's, and just starting to lay out some groundwork as far as what we'd like to see happen.
Wonderful. Thank you. Any other announcements from the board?
Heritage Hills Halloween is October 15th and 22nd. If you haven't been, it's well worth going to. And then also they're trying something new with the Farm to Fork Seasonal Heritage Dinner, which is October 27th. So I hope that goes well. It would be nice to get some more of those Field to Fork things going in our community, and especially there at Heritage Hills. So if you're free, it should be a good dinner.
You can get more information at heritagehillgb.org.
Exactly.
Any other announcements from the staff?
I have not an announcement, but just an update that I know people have been asking about the Red Chapel over at the Alloway Catholic Cemetery. And it has been progressing slowly but surely. Jim's done quite a bit of work on preparation of information of Bishop Krupphover. And there was a meeting earlier this week in regards to it. There is a meeting tomorrow. And it is progressing. It was stagnated for a while. However, some work is potentially set to start soon for stabilization purposes. There'll actually be a fundraising portion that will be launched during that to be defined.
Okay, great. Thank you. Anything else? Hearing none, we will move on to agenda item number 5, public appearances. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to speak on any matter other than something that's in tonight's agenda? Mr. O'Rourke.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I'm an Alloway resident in the old Alloway area. I'd like to talk tonight about the SHAM PDDs, Planned Development Districts, and how the village has used them to sneak around the zoning code, which is illegal. I object to the ongoing scheme by village officials to use SHAM PDDs, Planned Development Districts, to circumvent the lawful zoning code. SHAM PDDs, Planned District Developments, and undocumented closed board meetings have the effect of resulting in illegal de facto rezoning. De facto rezoning is rezoning a property without actually going through the zoning process, simply changing the land use on it without going through the lawful zoning process. I'm most concerned about the following PDDs that have been proposed and heard by the board over the past several months and years. Currently, and most offensive to the local neighborhood, has been the apartment complex designed for the Martha Street and Webster Avenue area. Six or eight unit apartment complex buildings have been designed to put on single family lots. That's not allowed. No matter what you call it, that would need a rezoning to apartments, not simply a PDD. The old Chapel Hill apartments are on a commercial property, and that site does not require sidewalks. Prior to the de facto zoning to apartments from a commercial site, that site, the village told a developer who wanted to put a gas station in there to go through the PDD process instead of rezoning it highway commercial. Two gas stations happened in that same format. The one on the old Chapel Hill site on Highway 57, which is Riverside Drive, and also on the commercial site next to the Webster Heights condominiums. The St. Joseph condominium owners and the Webster condominium owners all had to come in here and defend their rights to have the zoning laws enforced, and they shouldn't have to come in. And had they not come in, there's always a chance with one bad meeting that they would lose some significant value to their property. Finally, the recently collapsed PDD proposal on the Old Town and Country Supper Club by Mayflower is another example of a sham PDD. There was no reason to put that developer through the PDD process other than some wild ideas by some village officials. That property should have just been sold straight out, allowed to be developed in a commercial way, and we'd have a nice facility by now. Decisions by village officials have nothing to do with zoning law, with following the zoning law. It's simply preference, their own personal preference. I've asked my elected officials recently to ask guidance from the Wisconsin Attorney General on how to handle this. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to join us this evening and talk about anything that's not on the agenda? Hearing none, we'll move on. And just to make sure I don't forget anyone later, is there anyone who does want to talk about something that's on tonight's agenda? Okay. We see some new faces. That's why I asked. So thank you for being here. Okay. Agenda item number 6. Action regarding Fox River Trail snow removal agreement. I will start out by making an enthusiastic motion to support the snow removal agreement that's being proposed. Do I have a second? Trustee Atwood. Any discussion? Trustee Green.
I just have one question. It looks like there's a new contract that was put up here late, so I'm just wondering, how does that differ from the one in our packet, and is there anything substantial in it?
That is correct. Item number 7 has changed in the one that I placed at your seats. The original one that was in the packet was for a 2-year contract, and then it would need to be re-signed after that. This new one is a 1-year contract that automatically renews. We still have the 60-day, I believe it was the 60-day, where we could get out of the contract if need be. But this one, we only have to sign it once, and it automatically renews anyway.
Thank you.
Trustee Harris.
I realize because of the date we're doing this, we wouldn't have funds in the 2016 budget. Are we anticipating any cost that would be incurred just to be handled out of normal operations?
Yes, we will. I don't know exactly what those costs would be. in looking at what our snow season typically is, there's not going to be very much in 2016. The majority of it's going to be in 2017. And we have looked at our fiscal year operating budget for 2017 and counted for that.
Yep, I saw that. Thank you.
And the technical start date is
November.
It snows over an inch.
I believe it's November 1st.
Okay, sir. For those of you in the audience who don't know what we're talking about, this started about a year ago, a request to plow the Fox River Trail for recreational use. And it was a result, at least in part, of all the public meetings that were held regarding the reconstruction project of Riverside Drive. And there was a movement underfoot to include bike lanes and sidewalks and expand Riverside Drive. And through a series of public meetings and gaining input from the residents, recommendation was, why don't we use the Fox River Trail for bike and pedestrian traffic and leave Riverside Drive as is to the best of our ability so that we don't impact our property owners. And so the board directed Mr. Clark to go work with the powers that be to see if we can do that. We're incurring the cost to do so. And it's a very exciting thing because I think with the use that trail gets in the summertime and the people we've talked to, I think they'll have great use in the wintertime. So congratulations. Thanks for all your hard work. Any other comments?
Where are we at with the other municipalities? Everybody on board?
From my understanding, City of DePere is currently looking into doing snow removal on their section as well. I don't know at what stage they're at yet, but it does look like it's progressing and moving forward in DePere as well.
And City of Green Bay has been plowing theirs, haven't they?
Correct. I believe there was still a short section just north of our border that has not been plowed, but I believe that they were going to look into that as well.
I'm sure all the folks in Green Bay would like to be able to get down to Alloway, so it's nice that we're providing them access.
And then the East River Trail will remain groomed, I'm assuming, so that someone who wants to do a winter activity on that trail will have the ability to do so during when you're experimenting.
That is correct.
Other comments, thoughts, discussions? We have a motion on the to approve and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Chris. Agenda item number 7, whether or not to list the pump house on Green Avenue. At our last village board meeting, the question came up whether or not we want to list the property, and if so, how we want to list the property, and under what conditions. And so we sent staff back to answer some questions for us. The board at the time did decide that we do want to sell it. It's the pump house on Green Avenue. It's no longer in use, and it's aging, and it's a pretty cool building, and we've had some interest in the property. So we said, yes, we want to sell it. Now let's figure out the right way to do it. And some of the questions we sent back to staff to have answered are, how much do we want to charge for it? Do we want an appraisal? Do we want to require that it maintains its historic designation because it's a historic property? And do we want to list it with a realtor or for sale by owner? Staff came back and made recommendations. And the recommendations were to list the property. It says the assessed value is at $20,000 by the assessor, but it's not an appraisal. Correct? And that they would recommend selling the property at or below the estimated assessed value. And to list it as list it for sale by owner, because we do have activity on it right now. and to post the sale to the village website. And regarding, also, should we go through a PDD process or rezone it? And the recommendation by staff is to leave it as is until we accept an offer and then go through the rezoning process if our zoning code allows for that use, if I am correct.
Sure.
Otherwise, we would have to look at some other process. Do we want the buyer to maintain historic designation? The village has, village and the federal government has spent money to put it on the register. And so the recommendation is, yes, we want it to maintain its historic designation. And should we have an appraisal done? And the recommendation is that the League of Wisconsin Municipalities advises municipalities to obtain an appraisal to eliminate the possibility of a successful taxpayer suit challenging the adequacy of the purchase price. And I know Mr. Lang put a call into an appraisal company. Would you like to tell us what happened?
Yes, the one appraisal company that responded back to me so far indicated that they're booked and unable to do so until later November. The estimated cost for the appraisal is about $1,500 to $2,000, and they're waiting for a return phone call from yet another appraiser.
Okay, thanks.
One of the discussions I had with one of the companies was the fact that this is a unique property, and to come up with a comparable might be a little bit difficult.
Okay. Yet it's still a recommended approach.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, so I think that answers the questions. And
One other direction was that staff was to notify the residents within 300 feet. I don't know if any of the new people here tonight are any of those residents, but at least hopefully they are, and they're getting some questions answered from this panel.
Great, thanks. Does anyone in the audience live by the Green Avenue Pump House? Is that why you're here? Good. Thank you for joining us. Okay, I have a motion, but if anyone has a motion on this issue?
Should we talk through a couple of the different options before establishing a motion? Otherwise, we may need to revise that motion.
Yeah, we can do that. We can do that. Okay, let's take them one at a time. Do we want to do an appraisal?
Well, I know it's recommended, but a question for Attorney Dennis Delpyway is here. Is it required that we do an appraisal if we have an as-is offer?
I think the League of Municipalities, their opinion was saying that an appraisal gives you a more defensible reason for whatever purchase price you agreed to, and unless the board collectively feels that they got a real good sense for the fair market value of that property, an offer alone doesn't dictate value. It's the buyer's opinion as to the value that you're receiving in an offer purchase. So I'd probably err on some form of appraisal, although I've got a very high opinion of the village assessor's ability to place values on property. And it wouldn't necessarily have to be a full-blown appraisal if you could get somebody to give you something a little less than an appraisal that's 10% of the assessed, quote, the assessed value of the property.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards appraisal as a short version.
Okay, but it doesn't, in your opinion, it doesn't have to be a full-blown one, just something that gives us a good feeling about the value of the property.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, any other questions on appraisal? Yes, Trustee Darby.
Is it possible to get an appraisal on the land only? There must be a value of the land.
Well, that's one aspect of value. It's appraisal is a combination of your land value and your improvements.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd want both because you're selling both. And
but if you sold it for the value of the land, would that cause complications in the future?
Well, I think you'd want to know what the value of the building on it is in any event. You know, if you're going to negotiate a transaction, so you can sell it. It may present, it's kind of unique. It's not on the historic register, but it also has issues.
Oh, I know.
And those issues, obviously, are going to go to value, because if it's maybe low, it might be less than what we think. I wouldn't separate the two, no. I'd get them both.
Any other comments, questions on appraisal? Okay. Regarding the asking price, it's hard to come up with an asking price unless, if we're going to do an appraisal.
Right.
Do we want to sell it by owner, or do we want to list it with a real estate?
I don't know, why couldn't we just put a sign in it and sell it ourselves? I mean, it's not a huge amount of money. We haven't had great success listing other properties, so I'd say try it ourselves.
And as our memo said, we already have interest in the properties, so
right,
we shouldn't have to go through that process.
Right.
Do we want to list the property as is?
Yes.
I would say so.
Okay.
As any other.
How do you feel about that, Trustee Green? Do we want to require maintenance of the historic designation of the building?
Yes.
I would definitely say yes to that one, too.
Trustee Harris?
My understanding is that the tank in the back of the property doesn't have historic preservation recognition. Therefore, there wouldn't be an issue with removing that tank, correct?
Okay. It's just the front building, is my understanding.
Is it just the facade? Could you get away with just keeping the facade, or is it much more involved than that? I mean, it's kind of bad on the inside.
Yeah, the facade is nice, but the inside.
That's a Trevor question.
And then,
as far as my understanding, you have to keep the building as a whole.
And I'm wondering if we do decide to list the property because of the historic designation, do we want a plan of use submitted along with an offer because of the historic designation, significance of the property, and the time and money that both the village and the government have invested in it?
So, Trevor, how would they do that? If they have to maintain the building, but the tank goes away, do you have some examples of what you could do with behind that? Because would anything they would put on behind it affect the historical designation of the front building?
There's architects at the state level that would walk through that process and make sure that the historic integrity would be maintained. It could be that maybe it's just as long as the addition isn't seen from street view. I know the tendency might be to match exactly. However, from what I understand, it might be more important so that it doesn't match, so that you can you're able to distinguish what's old and what's new. But there are architects of the state that walk you through that process.
So if we require maintenance of the historic designation, we don't have to ask anything additional, but it would be covered by that. Trustee Harris's question.
We would ask whatever is required by statute as the owner of the property that has a historical designation. So,
okay.
As far as your discretion, at least that way, if you state it that way, you know, we can cover.
Okay. Okay. So those were the questions at hand. Are there any other questions from the board or topics of discussion on that?
The historic preservation, whatever. I see part of that, but really, I mean, does the building really have that much historic character that we want to keep it? Or are we handcuffing any potential buyer to do something by keeping that in there?
Well,
I know we don't have a lot of historic buildings, but
any potential buyer would get tax credits for any improvements to the property.
So it is a benefit to those who want to keep that property. And
but they also can't come by what they can and can't do.
That's no different, though, than the people who are in historic housing districts that are required. They have to keep certain parameters.
Yep.
There's a house on Beaumont Street that was changed, which was historically significant, and they changed it and then lost its historic designation because of that.
The historic look of that building and the identity of that building is its greatest asset. With that gone, there's not a whole lot there.
Just to keep going.
Trustee Evelyn.
I'll reserve.
Okay.
Back to the zoning on that. If that's zoned, it's zoned governance, and the surrounding buildings are zoned. I know there's some businesses across the street, there's some apartments. So what's the zoning surrounding that area?
There's some houses.
Yeah.
Yeah, retail.
There's almost every single zoning classification surrounding it. I know there's commercial, high density, lead a residential, about it on one side. So and B residential. I'm sorry, that's probably actually the more correct one. Is the one if you're going east under the avenue, that's B residential.
And Brad, you said you were quoted anywhere between $1,500 and $2,000. And from a guy who really didn't want the job, that's hopefully that's the high end, do you think? I mean that respectfully, but okay. He wouldn't give you a lowball offer if he wanted the job. Okay. Any other comments, questions on this? Any other? Anything else, Mr. Harris?
I was just looking at the notes from January 2nd, 2015 meeting.
Okay.
The property is currently zoned village-owned, and the surrounding property is commercial to the west and south, high-density to the north, and B residential to the east.
Yeah. It's an eclectic mix. Okay. Okay. If there is no other discussion, I'll make a motion that hopefully reflects what we just discussed. I will make a motion that we first of all get quotes from reliable firms for an appraisal of the property and give staff the ability to order the appraisal if it's in the ballpark of $2,000 or less. Have staff then come to the board and recommend an asking price based on the results of the appraisal. The village board to approve the asking price, then to approve the asking price. And once that is complete, we'll list the property for sale by owner as is and publish on the website. We'll require require maintenance of historic designation with the sale of the property, and we will leave the property zoned government until the offer is accepted, at which time we will either rezone or approach it another way. Did I cover everything? Let's find out. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Trustee Ginner. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. We're getting there. Oh. Would you like this? Would that help?
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Agenda item number 8, county tax collection agreement. I've been asked to postpone this discussion item because our county treasurer, Mr. Zeller, had a meeting with county clerks today and this afternoon, and the village clerks gave Paul some feedback, and he's going back to, not to the drawing board, but going back to consider some of their input. This was discussed at the County Board of Supervisors meeting not too long ago, and we have one of our supervisors here, Joan Brusky. I'd like to thank you publicly for supporting us, both Joan and our
other supervisor voted in opposition to transferring a cost to the village that 85 cents per tax bill that was borne by the county they want to send to us in terms or in an effort to save money. Well, it's saving county money, it's just reallocating the funds in our estimation and that of the county board. However, the treasurer has gone ahead. He doesn't require approval from the board or municipalities, but he did meet with the clerks and listened, and hopefully we will come to a nice agreement.
The 85 cents, I don't believe, is going to go away.
Okay.
Darn.
Okay, I take back everything nice I used. No. So, keep your fingers crossed. Brad, did you want to say something? Or Joan, would you like?
Yeah, I was going to just ask if Supervisor Prusky had anything she would like to add.
Not specifically. This was first covered in the administration.
Can you give her a mic, please?
This was first covered in the administration committee meeting, and it was upheld by a 3-2 vote. And then one of the three that voted for it was absent at the county meeting, county board meeting, so the two that were voting for it continued their vote, and then 23 of us were in opposition to it. So there was a lot of discussion about it, and the administration committee minutes and agenda are on the county website if you want to see any of the discussion. So I'd be happy to assist anybody with anything.
Yeah, you can watch it live. I watched it live.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Okay, good.
You need to get a life. Okay, any questions for Joan?
Were there any new costs associated with that, or was it, shall I say, cost shifting to the municipalities to save the county an increase, or what really?
Well, he was tracing the cost for 2 years to get an average, so he took, I think the cost was 90-some thousand divided by 103-some parcels. So it came out to actually 87.873 cents per bill. So then he rounded it down to 85. So, and he said he was firm on this, about this. And there were some costs, like, you know, it has to have a special ink cartridge, and there's some specific things, and there's costs for staff and things like that, too.
Was it saving money somewhere else? I mean, I assume it's a growing number of people that pay electronically.
Well, he said someone asked him if it would make any difference in the staffing of the county treasurer's office, and he said no, that they absorb this in their regular day-to-day operations. However, then he also said there's also listed some limited time employment, so I'm not really sure where he's coming with that.
I thought he said they bring in two or three temp people to help process the tax bill, so his staff is doing what they do day in and day out anyway. Okay. Thank you very much, Joan. So I will make a motion to postpone this item until we have an agreement to look at. Do I have a second? Trustee Dart, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Action item number 9, regarding offers to purchase Green Avenue Pump House. I'm going to make a motion to lay this item on the table until an appraisal is complete and the listing price has been approved, and because we don't know what we're going to list it for, and to notify those who have submitted offers to purchase via their agent on record that the village will contact their real estate agent of record when the property is ready to be listed, and that the village board will consider their offers to purchase at that time if they are still interested. We have people interested in the property, and we'd like that to continue, but we want to do it the right way. So we have a motion on the table. Do I have a second? Trustee Dart. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much. Item number 10, discussion action regarding listing of properties on Riverside Drive, parcels AL-125-7 and AL-125-8. Mr. Lang, could you fill us in?
Actually, Attorney Duffy and I were just speaking that we should probably have an appraisal done on this property as well. That was not listed in my memo, but certainly when I contact the appraisal company, will ask for that one as well.
Okay.
But it would be the recommendation. I guess we'll come back with the listing price once we have the appraisal done as well. But our assessor again was looking at an amount at 225 to 240, but that could change based on the appraisal. It would be the recommendation once we get the appraisal back that the village listed for sale by owner. Listed as a commercial property, which is currently zoned. And we'll get that going, and we'll put it on our website and put a sign out and contact some of the developers that we have in the Brown County area to let them know that it's there, as well as the realtors, and things will move along.
Okay. So do you need a motion to do an appraisal?
I think that would be appropriate.
Could I have a motion? Trustee Green.
So moved.
Seconded by Trustee Dart. We have any discussion?
Might be a golden opportunity to get a package deal and push that date forward and have them both done. So I think we're in the driver's seat now. So use it.
Good idea, Trustee Atwood.
Quick history, how did the village end up with that property?
It's not close.
The property became available due to back taxes. We purchased the property last year around this time, maybe in September, or approximately, if I'm recalling, 50-ish.
Yep, around 50.
That was 58.
Okay.
Back taxes.
I saw it when I first sat down. Yep. Okay, great, thanks.
Okay. So we have a motion on the table and second. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
We addressed that it was the former Common Country Supper Club, so it's listed by parcel number, but that's the location.
Thank you. Any other discussions? Did we lose our papers? Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Agenda item number 11, discussion action regarding open government. I believe that great things happen when a community comes together to solve problems. And unlike a gentleman who spoke at the last village board meeting, I believe in listening to people's opinions and bringing them into discussion and debate and moving forward with a great solution. Last week, a lady who chooses to make us her entertainment venue every other Tuesday, Judy Poe, came forth during the open government section and said, I feel like I'm watching my two young boys fight, and we need two good people to figure out how to move forward. And I took that to heart, and you're right. Alloy's a great place. We don't want to have dysfunction. We want to move forward together. And so in that spirit, I had reached out a couple of times to Mr. O'Rourke and asked him if he'd like to sit down and talk through things. That there's no reason two good people can't figure it out. There was not an acceptance of that, and I'm okay with that. But it started me thinking about perception and reality. When someone thinks one thing, because perception is one person's version of reality, and we all have our own perceptions. And so I started thinking about some of the comments that had gone back and forth, and I know Mr. O'Rourke feels as though he's maliciously attacked by me reading his emails in public. That's not the intention. The intention is the attention. Intention was to discuss things that are of public interest in a public forum. It was also to try and reduce the number of emails that get sent to multiple people regarding the same issue. And we have an obligation in the local municipality and local government to not conduct business behind closed doors. And an email chain can be behind closed doors. So I wanted to bring it up in the open. However, that wasn't perceived well. And so in understanding that, and understanding Mr. O'Rourke's perception that he's being attacked, I surely don't want that. I didn't intend for that to happen. And reversely, we have some village staff and village board members who believe that they are maliciously attacked by these emails. So it's all perception and reality. I hope they're not meant to be malicious. But regardless whether they are or not, I'm going to say, at least for now, or at least my plan, is to suspend having open records or open government sessions where we read off all the emails. And in reverse, I ask that Mr. O'Rourke, when he sends an email or writes an email, takes a look at it, said, do I really mean to say that? I recommend everyone do that. Thanks to Judy. And see if that's really what I want to say. And if I mean to hurt someone, if those words are going to be hurtful. And if that's the case, I ask you to change the tone. Also, I ask that you refrain from sending multiple versions of the same email to many different people. We need to be good stewards of our residents, our taxpayers' dollars. And every time one of us gets an email, including staff and village board, we're reading that. We're spending taxpayer dollars. And lastly, I ask that you do that. And lastly, I ask you do that because we don't want to get pulled into an open record or an open meetings discussion. We want to conduct things in public. So that's what I ask. And once again, if you'd like to get together with anyone to discuss anything, this is the perfect place, but I'd be happy to do it in private if you'd like, with a recording if you'd like. And lastly, if that fails and we still face the issues of getting multiple emails and wasting taxpayer dollars and being pulled into conversations outside of the public forum, I'm going to recommend to the board and staff that we need to do something, so maybe we'll just redirect all emails from Mr. O'Rourke into a single email account or to a single person to be handled in the most efficient way possible. So I hope we can go forward. Mr. O'Rourke adds a lot of value to this community, and so does our staff, and I want people coming here loving it as much as we all do. Any other comments from the board?
I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense, and I think Judy mentioned, like you referenced earlier today, that we need to be as civil as we can be, and I know I tend to get a little uncomfortable when some of the words are used to make allegations, suggestions, whatever. So I would support your motion, your policy, or your suggestions that we try to focus on the positive aspects and try to grow the community and being as open and as positive as possible.
After watching the county supervisors meeting, not you, Joan, I was interested in some of the comments made, and it's just not what we want this to be. So I hope we can move forward in a positive direction and make Alloway everything it can. Okay. Moving on to, I lost my agenda here.
It's just discussion, no action required.
Okay. Pardon me?
Is that no action required?
No action required. Thanks. And then, action item number 12, consent agenda. We will take them items A through E, if everyone's okay with that. As one, do I have a motion? Trustee Green.
Move to approve.
Thank you. Do I have a second? Sure. Trustee Harris. Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 13, monthly report on ways to reinvigorate Neighborhood Watch. DEO Jason Bowman. Come on up, Ron. Come on.
I'll go. First of all, just on the Neighborhood Watch program, continued efforts right now. Summary, you know, the farmers market, having the sign up sheet up there, newsletter each month, postings on our website and at the Village Hall here. Farmers market's the last one of this week. So after that, begin to trying to get an email or call people and have a meeting here in November here to see if we can set something up with the people that expressed interest. Another thing, too, kind of looked at the block parties that are going on in Alloway here. Be a little bit more aggressive next year. And I've attended two so far this year, and working on police presence at a third here on the 15th coming up. Just again showing, you know, the squad car, handing out Packer cards and talking to the neighbors and everything else. Kind of an offshoot of the Neighborhood Watch program. Happy to report there is a 0.32K walk tomorrow at 6 p.m.
I'm in.
Maybe our neighborhood block captain can explain a little more here. She's present. 6 p.m. for the Fall Longview Avenue Neighborhood Watch meeting. Pelle Bojanek. Did I say it right?
No.
Bojanek. Okay. Kudos to Polly for putting this on. You know, and a thank you for all of her efforts.
Can we suspend the rules and ask you to come up if you'd like to?
Yeah.
Would you like to tell us all about it?
Sure.
Absolutely. You take all the credit for this one.
Good evening.
Good evening.
This is the first time I've come to one of these meetings. I'm here with my son, and as we just said, what did we get ourselves into? My name is Polly Bojanek. I live at 334 Longview Avenue. I've been a resident of Alloway for 33 years. I've lived in this area for 35 years, and my husband and I are very social people, and we like to do parties, and my lead gift is administration, so you take those two things together, and you get somebody who wants to be the neighborhood watch captain. So we moved into the Longview neighborhood in 1992, and it was actually that first year that another neighbor ordered or organized the watch program, and I'll tell you, the part we really liked was the sign. We wanted that sign, and we were so proud of our sign. And after about 10 years, they took our sign away.
Oh boy.
And boy, was there, our sign.
I just started the first
week. So that little free LOA neighbor magazine that comes out had an article about, you know, if you want to start a neighborhood watch program, I love to organize things, and we like to do social parties, my husband and I, and we wanted our sign back. So I said, I'll do this. So I think we're still waiting for our sign.
We put them all. We'll get them in closer. We'll find a different utility pole.
He thinks that there might be one sign out, but it's not where we had the sign before. But anyway, so Deputy Bob said what you should do is have two social events a year. And so, I mentioned my husband and I are very social. We know most of our neighbors, which is very, very unusual. So we decided we would have a little get-together in our driveway, and we invited Deputy Vogel over to talk to the neighbors, and so I just printed up the little thing that the Neighborhood Watch magazine puts together, and we hand-delivered. There are 21 people on Longview between Dillahut and Libel. So we hand-delivered 21 of them, and we talked to 20 of those people, and I took my little cell phone, and I have a name, I have a phone number, and I have an email for 20 of those 21 neighbors. So I came home, and I put it all on my computer, and we now have an ability to email people. So if you're going on vacation, or if you're having a garage sale, if you want to communicate with me in some way, you tell me, and then I can get it out to these 21 people. So again, to get our sign, we had to have two of these. So we came up with this idea of the .32K walk. So we wanted to have a walk. We wanted to walk on Longview from Dillahut to Libel. So my husband drove it. It's just a hair under 0.2 miles, and we put that, I think we asked Siri, and we found out that was .32K. So our second meeting is tomorrow at 6. We're starting at the Brooks driveway at the top of the intersection there at Libel and, or I mean at Dillahut and Longview. We're going to walk to the bottom. There's a water station halfway through if you get thirsty. Then we come back to my driveway and we hang around a little bit more and we chat and we do the neighborly thing and we get to know each other. And we have two new neighbors, so we hope to have an opportunity to meet our new neighbors. But if anybody wants to know how to have fun with the Neighborhood Watch program, I'd be happy to tell you what we do.
Perfect.
We have fun.
Awesome. Sounds like we have a village coordinator. Yeah.
I hope that you will stay in constant contact with DEO, Jason, and make sure you get that sign. If you need to call him every day,
I have his number.
I didn't realize it was specific. A lot of people have
And bring your neighbors to the next village board meeting. Yeah. Great place to have a meeting.
Sure.
And fun.
We'll get that information out. Tuesday entertainment.
Jason will provide treats.
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for that update, Jason. Anything else from you?
No, it's
covered.
Okay. I just like. Go on.
Before you finish, I have one other thing I want to throw out. With this being, just as a suggestion, with this being the last farmer's market of the season, I don't know if there's any communication with the vendors to get their feedback on how things went for the year, where they've seen improvements, where they have some suggestions to us, or more than likely you guys have already thought of that and I'm behind as usual.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're nodding.
Gary Strawn, our market manager, has done a really good job for us this year. He's been there from open to close every market except one. And he's been in communication the whole time with them, soliciting ideas, ways to improve, as well as I've ventured out there as well and got some of the ideas. Our thought is to also have a survey that's done to the residents to see where they think we can improve as well. And it might be a good idea to send that survey or some sort of survey out to the vendors as well, just so that they have a way of blindly submitting their suggestions. That's a good idea.
So, behind as usual.
Okie doke. And closing out the Neighborhood Watch, I just wanted to. We were talking about a great community and how great of a community it is, and when Deputy Vogel was up here, I just wanted to share that, shout out to Deputy Vogel for two things this week where citations could have been issued to people for things, and instead of that, Deputy Vogel sat down with the property owners in both cases and worked out great solutions to their problems and identified a need where someone needs help, and he went out and he found the help. So thank you, Mr. Vogel. That's exactly what we need you to do. Keep it up. We just had a village board meeting with two rounds of applause.
Raising that bar.
Okay, item number 14. Do I have a motion to convene into closed session pursuant to Wisconsin Statute 19.85 1E deliberating or negotiating the purchasing of public properties, the investing of public funds, or conducting other specified public business whenever competitive or bargaining reasons require a closed session. Specifically, TIF development proposal for 1649 and 1677 South Webster Avenue, developers agreement. Moved by Trustee Dart, seconded by Trustee Genrich. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Roll call. Trustee Harris.
Aye.
Trustee Genrich.
Aye.
Trustee Atwood.
Aye.
President Rafter. Aye. Trustee Dart.
Aye.
Trustee Green.
Aye.
Trustee Dennis.
Aye.
We are in closed session.